Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
I heard the first part sounded like Dark Shadows or something. And you were just connecting in and you were doing, ooh.
We got all kinds of theme songs
that
we can come up with.
Dark Shadows. I used to watch that. I used to come home from kindergarten and my Nana would count that as one of her stories that was on during the day. And I would watch that. And we both had the biggest crush on Barnabas Collins. And it was kind of our little secret, along with the fact that she kept a pack of Marlboro Reds and a fifth of whiskey in her sock drawer with the Fifth Avenue candy bars. But we had secrets. Secrets can be cool sometimes. You have secrets with your grandparents and, you know, and parents and people like that. It's awesome. You know, I know Steve did.
Yeah.
Gosh, if we started.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Pretty much. I'm always recording if I'm calling anybody, but you know, we'll keep our secrets for everyone.
But she tells you ahead of time. So if you do anything crazy, like start singing or make woo woo noises and stuff, you know, it's all on tape. We've got it all.
That's right.
Well, how y'all doing? Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
All Hallows Eve.
Indeed. Happy Halloween, everybody.
When the spooks come out to dance.
That's right. Sometimes with no pants, because it's a season of Zoom right now. And sometimes people don't have pants, you know.
And sometimes accidentally bad things happen.
Yeah.
So I've heard.
So we've heard. Yeah. So, we would never do such a thing.
I mean, I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not saying anything.
who wants to tell ghost stories?
Yeah. Here we are. We've got.
We don't know any ghost stories.
No, of course not. Not you two. I don't know why I even invited you here. Are you kidding? No. This is the sixth annual All Halloween with Steve Stockton and Cisco Murdoch. And honestly, I can't think of two better people to have on for such a thing. They both have lifelong experiences with the paranormal and are natural storytellers. And if by chance someone out there listening has never heard of either one of you, I will let you know a little bit about each of these guys. They have actually, like I said, lifelong paranormal experiences. We will not be able to get into those tonight. You can go back and listen to the many other episodes they have been on just ITF, but they have both co-authored a book together that is titled We Are All Children in the Wilderness of the Afterlife, a guided tour through a haunted life. And Steve, who is also a Beyond the Fray publishing author, has written 4 books with more on the way. Now, you likely know him well for his Strange Things in the Woods book, but is now working on National Park Mysteries and Disappearances Volume 3, which means, yes, Volume 1 and 2 are available now on Amazon, along with the co-author book with Cisco. And of course, yes, last but not least, you know, Steve's birthday happens to fall on Halloween, so this will air on the 28th. So happy early birthday, Steve Stockton.
Happy birthday to you. That's all you get.
She's serenading again. I love this. She's in a singing mood.
Yeah, I heard you that time.
No, welcome on again, guys. This is the sixth time that we have doing this. I see no end in sight. I was getting a little nervous because, you know, I had to postpone and then things had come up. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I think I asked too late. I waited too long and I was really worried that the sixth annual was not going to happen. But here we are. Thank you guys so much.
And it happens like that every year.
And it's only been 6. I thought it was more than that. It seems like it, but
God feels like it.
Yeah. We've all spoken many times.
You seen any ghosties in the past year there, Steve?
I don't think I've seen anything. I saw a shadow person in my house, but it's been more than a year ago. So.
Oh, wow.
Can't think of anything recently that's happened here in the house, but there's all kinds of stuff out there. Now, we've had some strange stuff happen on your show.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell it?
Here we go. Let's dive in.
Both tell it. We somehow invoke the wrath of the curse of the Titanic.
Well, now you got to give her the whole story. You got to go back and tell it. We were doing an episode. I'll set you up, Steve, and I'll let you go like a slingshot, okay? So we're on the show. We're doing Monday Madness. We do every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on my channel, my YouTube channel. We do a live with Steve and I, just shoot the works and see what we land on. So one night we might do Ghost Kids or Grinners or Cryptids or Bigfoot or whatever. And we have a great live chat. We have a lot of fun. So we're on there, and I'm in the shower like the Saturday before, and I get this idea of Titanic just keeps hitting me. And it won't leave my mind. I said, well, Titanic Ghost, we can do Titanic Ghost. I'll do a little vid. It'll be nice. So we do. And we start telling all the ghost stories that have happened with the Titanic, the tourists that go on the exhibits and buy the coal souvenirs and take the coal back, and there's an attachment. And many have seen the engineers from the coal, that worked in the belly of the beast, you know, and return the coal usually with a take it away kind of attitude, or a letter and mail it back and say, please take this back. I'm sorry. You know, so we're telling all these stories, and Steve starts talking about the exhibits he's gone to. Go ahead. Take it away, Steve.
Yeah, well, there's one in Las Vegas. It used to be at, I think it's at the Luxor, where they had the Titanic exhibit there. And I've seen that one. Mm-hmm. And then there's a Titanic Museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. I also used to live in that area. And we were talking in particular about what they have at that museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And we checked the times on this. The very minute that we were discussing that particular exhibit and some of the weird things that have happened there, an iceberg wall that they had, it was a frozen wall of water that people could walk up and touch.
Yep.
And see what an iceberg felt like. It collapsed and sent, what was it, like 5 people to the hospital?
Mm-hmm. I think it was talking about it. Yeah, three or five. I can't remember. And I hate that I can't, but
I think it hurt five and three had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, I think that was
something
it.
Something like that.
Is that not something? The very minute. Do you have the article, Shannon? I sent it to you in the messenger when we were chatting.
I do, and I will link that in the show notes for folks. Absolutely.
So you've seen the article, Sharon.
Yes.
This is now the extra caveat. This comes with fries. This Happy Meal right here comes with some fries. Okay. I was telling Steve the beginning of the episode, and we were shooting things all around, you know, ghost stories, and chat was adding stuff in there that, you know, we were talking about. But we did hit upon the fact that my oldest son, when he was born, he started reading at a very young age and always showed a fascination with the Titanic. Now, that's very odd for someone, you know, under the age of eight to be interested in something like that, right? Now, we were history people, so it was not unusual, but we talked a lot about stuff like that. So he was able to pick up on it, but to have an interest in it is odd. And he would talk about things, see pictures of like the designs on the plates that they had. And it seemed familiar to him. And it wasn't anything we really pinpointed and spent a lot of time, but over the years, it was prominent. So I was talking to Steve about, we got into reincarnated kids, and you know, I always thought it was possible that he might have died on the Titanic or knew somebody, had a connection. You never know. I mean, you never know in this subject. You just don't know. It's possible. So we talked about that. So right after the episode, how I found out that this had happened was he sent it to me at probably 12:30 that night. He sent me the article. So the one I think was connected to the Titanic in some kind of woo-woo reincarnated supernatural way sends me the article. And is that the night we decided to do the Titanic experiment, Steve?
I think we decided that night or the next night. But I found a place that sells actual pieces of coal. It's just tiny little things, but it's from the wreckage. It's salvaged from the wreckage. You can buy it as a souvenir. So I'm going to get one of those. And then the rest of the stuff is reproductions. There's like a first class ticket. There's a menu from the Titanic. Just some little odds and ends like that, that are all reproductions. But we have an actual piece of coal. We're going to do a Titanic paranormal challenge. We're going to send this box around to people that are sensitive to such things and see if anything manifests.
Mm-hmm. And we have volunteers out of our live chat too that said what it's going to be like is a almost like a relay race with this box of artifacts, and certain people are going to test it, you know, they're reading little things that they wrote, seeing if there's any attachments that they can connect to, and then kind of
groups of people that were passengers. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a website you can go to that they've got set up to see if you're related to anybody that perished.
See, there you go. And it's also going to wind up in Newfoundland, which is right outside of right near where the wreckage actually lies today. And one of the heartbreaking things about it, well, there's so many, you know, when you start thinking about this and being a passenger, what was it like in third class and steerage, for Pete's sakes, and, you know, what it was like to be in, you know, first class, where you weren't really used to fending for yourself and fighting like some of the people in, you know, that worked on the ship would, you know, I mean, the survival instincts and things, not used to working like that and having to do those things. So anyway, where the wreckage is, supposedly it's been reported that many a night ships that go by there can see orbs floating above the wreckage. And we're thinking about these orbs. We're talking all about this kind of stuff and really connecting with the chat and people. Everybody's got an opinion or a story or something about the Titanic. And it was just so amazing how everything happened. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, I'm going to Gettysburg, and I'm also going to stay in a haunted bed and breakfast, a house that was built in 1912 called the Hoover House. And some of my friends own it, and it's a fantastic place. But I'm on my way there, and I walk in the front door, and we take a left, and my friend, who is also a paranormal investigator and, you know, knows a lot about this thing, talking about Jim and Dave, Steve, of KSPS, Paranormal Investigators. Well, they own this haunted bed and breakfast. And he points and he says, look, and there's a model of the Titanic and all these things since 1912, the house and the Titanic, same time, right? And he said, you were mentioning the Titanic and your story about the episode. He said, look here. And he points to, he's got two glass containers, and they contain chips off of the railing from C deck of the Titanic. And he sits me down and he tells me the story. He said, 3 days before you got here, there is a guy that, because of these chips, was attached to them, that was on the Titanic. And he was, I forget the proper name for it, but he was like the captain of the kitchen. And he brought his crew with him. 62 individuals were on that boat that he brought on there under his employ, you know, to go on this Titanic. And they were locked in their rooms. Yeah. And they couldn't get out, and they were drowned. And he got with this other psychic that was at this Hoover house and said that they were part, he was going back to tell them that people were going to help them cross. Now you tell me that isn't something.
And they're talking about doing a Titanic 2 and trying to complete the voyage. And I've got Cisco to volunteer to go on that voyage. No way. And any ghosts that are still in the water out there, she's going to help them cross over.
Man, you can't get me on that water. I'll stay on the shore and do all I can, but with my whole heart, but I'm not going on that water.
I'm with you on that, Cisco. I mean, especially after the strange, if we want to use the word coincidences, I think synchronicity is a stronger word for what you guys just described. That is crazy.
What is that? Is that not a chain of mysterious events? I mean, seriously, I'm not making any of this up. You know, we've got multiple witnesses to this stuff.
I wondered when you told me that weekend we're going to talk about the Titanic. I was like, what? You know, where'd that come from? That was
where'd it come from?
But it, you know, it's like the timing or the synchronicity or whatever there it was meant to be talked about, or it didn't like being talked about, one or the other.
Well, yeah.
Because we were talking specifically about the curse.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yes, we were. And I sent it to Steve and I said, Steve, did we do this? I mean, I was serious. It was crazy. It was the middle of the night. And I'm like, oh my gosh, did we say something? We do something. It just felt, if you just think about it, it just seems that they want attention. Just like any other haunting, you know? Does that make sense?
I mean, have you guys ever felt like, I mean, probably specifically you, Cisco, I know just really how sensitive and how you do try to tap into some of these things. Do you ever feel like, I mean, besides what you said about your son, do you feel like you've ever really been in contact in any way, shape or form with anyone that was part of that Titanic disaster?
I feel connected, but not as connected as I do say Gettysburg. There is a definite draw and a pull there that never really goes away. But the Titanic has always been, I've always had his same fascination, but things don't seem familiar to me the way they do to him. There's a difference. You know, when we saw that movie, I don't think he really spoke very much for like 3 days. I mean, he was just riveted. He was just, you know, I've had that familiarity with other things, but not so much that. But I have been drawn to it, yes, all my life. The story, and you know, but I can't say it's not just heartbreaking, you know, and right. And the feeling for them, compassion and stuff. I don't know.
Steve, are you saying that you would go on the possible second voyage to finish?
No, I was gonna send Cisco.
Yeah, he's always sending Cisco. Cisco, do it. You know,
I'll be waiting when it comes into port. I'll hold up a sign.
Well, see, that's the thing, and you know, I definitely, you know, don't want to hog this time and stuff. That was incredibly if you just think about how all that went down, why did the idea, you know, press me? And this is it. If you're thinking about, I want to understand the spirit world, I want to understand earthbound spirits and why ghosts do things and how they do things, and whether it be animals or anything like that, it just seems that everything is connected, and they know when you're talking about them. They know when you're thinking about them. We hear this all the time. You know, I was there at your birthday. I was there when you thought about that song, you know, when you thought about us. It's a connection with the energy. So why not these strangers that perish in such a way that they would continue in mass to hover as orbs, as energy orbs above the wreckage, and some follow these artifacts? I mean, it's documented multiple times from multiple witnesses that everywhere this exhibit goes, or the ones that are, you know, more permanent, like in Las Vegas, they have constant, you know, things going on there, because everybody that goes is thinking about that. So that's feeding it energy, right? So if these people just wanting attention, I mean, you know, not so much that we were talking about it, but it wasn't just us. It was everybody in the live chat. It was everybody putting out this compassion and, you know, these stories. And that's a connection into that energy. This is what I can summarize. I'm just spitballing, but when you see stuff go down this way for 50 years and it continues to, you can see the connections, even among strangers. It's really miraculous how it can happen. And the saddest thing is when nobody listens. So what if we listen, right, Steve? What if we listen?
And I think that's what a lot of it is, because there's certain ones that you hear the same story about over and over and over. And I think there's still people there. They're still caught between this world and the next or whatever. And they're like, hey, we want our story told too. You know, why are you just talking about these people? There was, you know, this great number that perished, not just this handful that everybody talks about.
And you can almost see them there behind the, you know, the ice wall. I mean, it really was massive. If you look at the pictures, you know, and it was like, did they kick it over because some guy was being a jerk in the, you know, in the crowd and had absolutely nothing to do with that, when it was just a coincidence in timing? Or did they go, yes, we want out of here? You know, somebody's talking about us, somebody, and such a mass. That was a collective thought, you know, really live, that many people watching. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's interesting to think about.
I have a question for both of you guys. You're talking about these artifacts. Some of them are traveling. Some are permanent, like you mentioned, here in Las Vegas. Do you think that if finally these things were put away, maybe in a storage unit, wherever it was, and they weren't on display where people are talking about it and thinking about it and perpetuating this horrible thing that had gone on, essentially, and putting that energy out there, do you think it would be easier for those spirits that are attached to the items to then move on?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
I don't think
that's a possibility, because, you know, every tour group that comes through there, every person that views it for the first time, that's just adding to that energy out there, that thought form, or whatever you want to call it, and probably making those people relive it again over and over and over. Like, now, that's just my conjecture. So
yeah, like a calling them back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like calling them back. I absolutely think that's possible, because I know, you know, grief and low emotions, and I'm not. Again, anytime I talk about grief, I always have to make a disclaimer. Grief is your own. That's a personal thing. Everybody goes through it differently. But what I'm saying is it's a lower vibrational thing. It's sadness. It's a deep, deep, gnawing kind of sadness, you know? And that definitely holds things back, because that the spirit or the soul or the energy of that person doesn't want to leave somebody who's, you know, it's hard to walk away from that, you know? So that is one thing. And I know pets that do that, dogs especially, because they're more worried about us, as usual, as in life, as in death. Mm-hmm. They worry about us more than, you know, we think they do. So, yeah, you know, I don't think locking up the artifacts would let them go, but I think people not thinking about it, not connecting into it. I think there's definitely, like I said, a calling back. Sometimes yeah. People just come back, you know, to a place that, you know, they're just visiting. They're not stuck. Yeah. They've crossed over just because they want to hear people talk about.
Right. That would be the obverse of that. If you took all the artifacts and locked them away, then it might make them angry. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're just putting us away. You're going to forget about us. We're still here. We haven't gone anywhere. And now all this is in a storage shed somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just sad either way. Just really sad either way. Obviously.
Yeah, it truly is. And see, that's the thing. It tugs at the heartstrings. It's one of those stories. I mean, there's been a million catastrophes and massacres and wars and things like that. And when we can pick out a story that gives it a little bit more a human touch to it, and we start to care about the characters involved, and we can you know, give them a little bit more human characteristics and everything, make them familiar, then it does that to us, and we think, my God, what we have done. I mean, I've had dreams about being on the Titanic, you know, but as myself, not as somebody else, you know what I mean? Or it was always just, I wound up there like, oh God, you know, I know what's going to happen. I mean, that's happened a couple times, you know, but I wouldn't want to wind up in that water, you know?
Well, now, Cisco, just staying with you here for a minute, because you did bring up Gettysburg. So let's go ahead and talk about this. And by the way, you put a picture in our little group chat. Am I able to share that photo? And
sure.
Since you're going to be talking about it, I assume that people will kind of go, oh, yeah, I want to see that. So take it away. Let's hear about some of these recent Gettysburg incidents, because you've talked to us about Gettysburg before, as you mentioned already in this episode. You are very drawn to that place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the people, the living people there too, are also a draw, because they're fantastic. And, you know, there are a lot of like-minded people. And there's always, every year that we can have it, we have a Gettysburg bash put on by these wonderful people, the Berries and KSPS, and a lot of people are involved. But it goes to kids fighting terminal illness and vets, wounded vets. So it's great. You know, everybody gets together. It's a wonderful thing, but it's filled with paranormal people of all kinds. You've got demonologists and ghost chasers and ufologists. And it's just everything, and big feet, you know, big feet running around, more than one. So it's really cool. So I went up there for that. But at the same time, I got to spend a stay in a haunted bed and breakfast. And it's called the 1912 Hoover House, which I mentioned before when I walked in. They had the Titanic room, and we got to hear about the kitchen captain that wasn't leaving without his crew. And the fact that the person that he spoke to at that house did not know about the episode and the things that happened just days before. It was just crazy. But that wasn't a half of it. This house, I believe it used to have a speakeasy in the basement. It's probably 6 or 7 room, maybe even 8 bedroom, bed and breakfast, beautiful, redone. It's got its own bar. It's wonderful. So we go walking in there. And again, I got this feeling I'm here for something. Now, there's been in the basement pictures taken of a shadow person, beautiful if you want to say that about paranormal photography, but it is really a beautiful shot. And Pamela Barry got that. She's one of the part owners of that house. And it's a full, huge, I'd say 6-7 foot shadow figure. So black and so dark that no light, no color, no nothing. It's like it absorbed the light, like we always hear about shadow people. So she got that shot about 2 weeks before I got there. And of course, they say to me, you want to go in the cellar? I'm like, sure, let's go. So we go down there, and I go down. There was wonderful people. As it turned out, both of my sons were there. My son's fiance, Michael Lacciano. We had Brian down there. They were from a paranormal group from North Carolina, part of a group anyway, those two guys. And KSPS, Dave, Jim, and Mike Simpson. So we're all down there. And it's a wonderful group because you're going down there with, again, heart and intent. You know, protection prayer. We have protection mantra that we do and all kinds of other things. Everything is just chill. And everybody's got their own equipment. I'm just sitting there with nothing and listening and watching everything. So we're starting to get hits on the equipment that says the word. I forget what it's called. Then somebody else has got the one that spells out the word, and they have to read. You've got all these little hits going around the room. I mean, there's everything in this basement was brought down and placed around, from the flashlights to even somebody put down cat toys that if you touch them, they light up, which I thought was brilliant, using everything, right? Why not? EMF meters, the whole shebang, recorders. And behind me, I feel somebody. And I'm getting the energy from them. It's just, I don't want to say dark, but more than likely human being, angry, agitated that were there, that kind of feeling. Not positive, but definitely not what I would say a negative entity. This thing was human, and it's just hanging out in the shadows. And that's all I was really getting. Somebody in the group started finishing one of those little introductory mantras, basically to the spirits around us, that you could trust us. It was okay to talk to us and this kind of thing. And as soon as he said trust, I started to get a tickle in my throat and I start like this, like I'm going to cough. And it starts to feel like something's inside my throat squeezing. And at the same time, I'm getting these flashes. And the flashes would be like if I'm looking at somebody standing in front of me and they're looking at me face to face real close. But not enough too fast to make anything out, just flashes. And then I hear in my head, this is what happened. And it was broke up, but it basically was this. This is what happened when I trusted. And the squeezing in my throat's getting harder. And I'm coughing, and everybody's starting to look at me, and I got my hand up like, I'm okay. And she's showing me how she felt as she was being choked by somebody she trusted. Yeah. And everybody around me is just, you know, watching it, staying still. And I finally got out, okay, that's enough, I get it. And she stopped. At the same time, they're getting stuff on the other equipment. And I'm hearing Allison, and I said it. And Jim looks at me, somebody who's been in that house before, been on many investigations in that house, turns and looks at me like it was familiar, and he shook his head. And somebody else said another word. I can't remember what it was. And it was broke up. They weren't sure. And the next one read off one of the machines that said, Allie. At the same time, she's telling me in my head that he did it in the alley, which is right outside the door that I'm sitting in front of. So we pieced together after that little incident that other information that was given and picked up earlier from other investigations in that house was that there, it was a speakeasy. There was a girl, several that died there. One of them was outside. And they had been mistakenly calling her Allie and didn't realize at that time that was the alley that they used to come down and go into the speakeasy.
Mm.
And talking to some of the other people that have been there since that do not know this story, and this happened to me because it's the first time I'm really telling it, we found out that she had a little girl that she used to keep out there and hide so she could do what she needed to do. The shadow guy is the guy who did it. He's the one that killed her. Here's the kicker that I pieced together from other things that happened that night with her. I don't think she's there for revenge. I don't think she's stuck. I think she's crossed and coming back to visit. You know, that's what we say, not really a visit, but to come back, because she's trying to help him cross because it will help her. Wow. And if that isn't a kicker, I don't know what is. And since I've been there, that was a month ago, maybe 5 weeks ago. Four other people have been choked in the cellar the same way. And she is slowly coming out and talking to one of the other people there and confirming what I told him 5 weeks ago. Isn't that something?
Creepy.
Has she given any insight as to how to help this, I mean, her murderer move on mm-hmm. so that then she can move on?
Yeah, she, I don't know that she said how he could be. He's not listening. He's aggravated. And he is the one that was hanging upside down, almost kind of out, almost like it looks almost like a monkey swinging on the pipes back there.
Yeah, that's the picture that I referenced. Yep. Everybody, that please go to the show notes, IntoTheFrayRadio.com for yep. this episode. Yeah, and that's something I noticed immediately. I'm like, it looks like he's just peeking at you, but it does not look good.
No, it wasn't. He's very angry, and I think. And I say I think because I guess it's all theory, okay? That sometimes having that kind of anger and that kind of shame and jealousy and all those lower vibrations very well may, you know, appear dark. You feel dark. Maybe you appear dark. You know, I think there's a lot of different shadow people, shadow man, hat man. I think there's a lot of different ones. I don't want to lump them all together. But this one specifically, that's what I think at this point in time. But I'm going back. We're going to see more. You know, that wasn't the only thing that happened that night. We helped a little girl cross. It's extremely active house, you know, and it's just – it's amazing. And it seems to be – I would venture to say at this point in time, I feel comfortable saying that there is some kind of – vortex there, some kind of a wide open portal. It's more than a portal. I think it's more of a something that's even gotten bigger, because the people that go there, they're very, if you're going to go there and you're going to provoke and you're going to do things like that, you're not welcome. They'll tell you got to go. You know, that's not what they allow to happen there. It's love, it's kindness, it's compassion, it's everybody, you know, nobody's fighting over who's got the best stuff. It's just everybody's chill and everybody's nice. And I think that kind of gathering, if people are like that and helping each other and coming in together in kindness, has created some kind of a comfort light or a draw for some of these spirits, because some of them have crossed over and have taken it on upon themselves to come and bring other spirits or earthbound ghosts through, so they can talk to their loved ones that are actually staying at that bed and breakfast. It's incredible. It truly is incredible. You know,
that's a powerful place.
Yeah, it is. And I think that can be created just the same way that people gathered in the opposite and evil can create some kind of a portal that, you know, draws negative. I mean, I think both are possible. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
There you go. But we did. We also crossed little Carla that night, and she was an unfortunate little 8-year-old and just turned eight, she said. And I knew nothing about any of this. I was doing a tour, learning the history of some of the rooms and things that happened there. And so, all I heard was somebody coming up the stairs yelling, "Cisco." And one of the guys came and got me. He says, "We got a little girl that won't cross, and we think you can help." And the next, I'm like, "Hold my purse. Here we go." And it really can be that simple sometimes. You know, sometimes we like to make it sound, you know, and it is. Sometimes there's a lot of work and like therapy, and you have to go back weeks upon weeks or days upon days, whatever, and really work. But some are just at the edge, but don't quite trust who they're talking to. And they just need a little push, you know. I had Rob Guttrow on the other night, and he had to cross a dog spirit. And he actually had physical dog treats that he threw so the dog would go into the light. It was a beautiful story. But this, some just need a little something. And I just remember going down the stairs. I remember vaguely sitting in a chair, and there's beautiful people around this table. And they had been talking to this little girl who was killed. Not in that house, but in the neighborhood. It had been about 100 years, 90 or so. And she was watching her little brother on the stairs, and he fell and died. The mother, who was suffering from postpartum depression, just had a child, I guess wigged out and snapped, and went to punish the little girl by drowning her till she died in a tub. And this little girl didn't trust anybody and didn't remember love. So when we sat down, I immediately picked up on her, and I could feel her lean against. She just threw her like arms around me, and she trusted me because we had the same color hair, she said. I know that sounds funny, but that's what she said. And we had to remind her what warm light felt like. So I told her, remember the sunshine and things like that. And eventually a whole room full of strangers crossed an eight-year-old girl over into the light that had been dead almost 100 years and forgot wow. what love was like. That was cool.
Indeed.
There you go. Your turn, Steve.
Okay, yeah. And Cisco's like, mic drop.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it to sound like
no,
that.
No, but it is, though. That like was that's amazing.
I'm trying to tell the stories real quick with the feeling still in there because it was really the profound stuff, you know? But, you know, I want to shut up now. So
no, that was no. I didn't mean it like that either. That was just that's incredible what went on during
that
trip.
See what you got?
Yeah, what do you got, Steve? That's mine.
Yeah, because okay. So if we're gonna go there, then we will. No, but thank you so much, Cisco. I appreciate that. That's amazing about little Carla.
That is just beautiful.
Lovely, poignant story.
Yeah. No, but I reached out to my patrons and I said, you know, it's go time. Sixth annual, Steve and Cisco. What do you guys want to hear? And of course, they said anything from Cisco, and they requested a story out of the Great Smoky Mountains volume of Steve's newer books. Those are the last couple that came out. And then mine, I haven't heard since I think it was the very first time I had Steve on, which was the very first time I told my own shadow person experience on ITF. And that story is The Pile of Wallets. And I know that some of you guys already know this one, but I haven't heard it in a while, and I would just sure like it if Steve would share that. And then whatever other stories he would like to share from his experiences and collections.
Okay. Well, which one of those would you like me to start with?
Oh, let's do mine, of course. Pile of Wallets. I mean, I can't wait any longer.
Wait. Yeah. I can't wait. I love this.
Now that one, it's an unusual story. It's not really... I mean, it's more creepy than anything. It's not at all what it sounds like it's going to turn out to be. There's like a unintentional plot twist there at the end. But that was in my first book. I think it's the first book. It might have been the second book. They've been combined now into Strange Things in the Woods. It was Strange Things in the Woods and More Strange Things in the Woods. Now it's just one book. But that was a guy that I had worked with back in the 80s. And he was down for the summer down in East Tennessee visiting. I think it was his grandma or somebody like that. And worked at a fast food place that I did. And he was telling me just, you know, how sometimes people at work will just start telling you some wild story. He was telling me about, and I'd have to look back at my notes here, but someplace in New England, he was out hiking, and he'd stepped off the trail to take care of some business and found underneath a tree, and it was kind of haphazardly covered with leaves and sticks and debris and things. He found what looked like on the edge of a wallet. He kind of kicked at it and then realized that it was a wallet. And not only was it a wallet, there were several there. And he picked one of them up, flipped it open. It still had ID and credit cards and things like that in it. So he's getting spooked. And he opened two or three of them. They've all still got stuff in them. And he's thinking, you know, this is some serial killer's dumping ground. I need to get out of here or I'm going to find my wallet here. So he left, never went back. And that was his wild tale to tell me. But I just, you know, I remembered it. And then years later, when I put the book together, I almost didn't put that one in there. But I thought, well, I'll go ahead and put it in there. I just, you know, out of all the stories in the book, for that one to sound nonsensical, that one, for some reason, it just kind of struck me as, yeah, he's probably just making that up. And I didn't really vet anything, but anything that sounded too wild or too out of hand didn't make it in the book. And there weren't many of those. I mean, a lot of these were people that were friends or friends of the family or even my own family. So I knew the stories and had heard the stories and heard them retell them without flaw. So I went ahead and I put it in the book. And then years later, I was getting ready to go on a radio show. I decided just to search online, like pile of wallets, and then see.
Oh, wow.
What you come up with. I think I was going to make a video about it or something. And I found an article from right around the same time, maybe a couple years after this person, and I only knew him from work, so I won't even call him a friend, an acquaintance, a coworker. And there was a policeman talking about how one time he thought he had found a serial killer dumping ground, and it was in the same state, in the same area, and same thing. He's in the woods. It might have been a park ranger, some sort of law enforcement, and he starts finding these wallets. And he's thinking, you know, holy cow, there's something weirder. So he calls in the FBI and all this, and they start going through these. And then they start finding out that the people with whose ID and whose credit cards and things are still in here, they're not missing at all. They're still alive. So like, okay, now what's going on here? Well, it turned out that every single one of them had worked at a hospital. I want to say it was in Rhode Island. I don't have the book in front of me. But somebody had, that didn't work there had somehow gotten in several times into the employee dressing area and was stealing people's wallets and pocketbooks and things like that out of the lockers there and taking whatever they wanted out of them and then throwing the rest of it out in the woods. But the really weird part, I think he said some of them had cash in them, but still they had IDs and credit cards. But you know, that would scare the crap out of me if I started finding several different wallets with identification and things in it and credit cards. And as you'd think anybody that was going to steal those would have gotten rid of that. And it did sound, and the cop thought the same thing, serial killer dumping ground. But then it turned out it was just a robbery, thievery.
I always loved that one.
But just the way, when you read it in the book, the way I describe it there, where you're digging through the leaves and you see the wallets and stuff, there's, even if I do say so myself, that was a good little bit of prose there, the way I retold it. He told it to me about the way I'm telling it now. Well, I got a little more descriptive with it, and so people could visualize it. But yeah, and after that, I had such a good feeling about putting it in the book, because here, decades later, somebody telling the same story, just right around the same time, probably a couple of years afterwards, had discovered the same thing. And then, so there you go. You know, that's even something that can sound wild or unsensical, even of a non-paranormal or non-supernatural nature, it can have a truth in there.
Well, I myself am happy as Hades that you included that story. That always stuck with me because I can put myself in most situations.
Several people say that's one of the best stories in there. Or if you ever let somebody make like a compilation out of these or a like the vignettes or something, you know, like a story in a movie or something. So that's, that one's got to be in there. Mm-hmm.
That's such a great idea. We should do that.
Yep.
Yep. And I mean, it is. It's a great idea. You
throw
know,
some wallets out in the woods and let them sit there for a while. And
no, I mean, make the vignettes, the compilation of all these little things and little stories acted out. Yeah. It would be great. You know, we got to do that mini series. I think I'm going to have Steve do my one of mine into a mini series, but I can see it the way you describe it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's that's the way, that's, you know, storytelling. You got to be able to get there. You know,
and, you know,
it's cool.
The way he described it to me, I was seeing it in my head. I was seeing the trees, I seen the leaves, and you know, what's the corn? What's that corner or something there? It looks leather. Mm-hmm. Kicking it and falls open. You know, it's a wallet.
Oh yeah,
that would be strange. I wouldn't have stuck around either.
Nope.
As soon as I started seeing ID and credit cards and stuff in them, I'd be gone.
Yeah, that's on the
I
no
had
list.
Something similar to that happen once up in the Smokies. I found a. a bunch of Polaroid pictures that somebody had torn up and left out in the woods. And it was like probably their wife and kids and, or something like that. It was a family. And I was thinking somebody was out there, getting, and you know, there was no, thankfully there was no bodies or anything nearby, but somebody had gone out in the middle of nowhere and ripped up what was left of their family photo album. I mean, it was like dozens of pictures. So that's probably even creepier than the wallets.
It is, because I got to think the what that spot felt like, that kind of emotion.
Yeah.
You know, to
and
be just felt in that area.
I kind of looked around. You know, well, here's the photos. Is there anything else here? Right. I had in my head, you know, somebody came out here that had gotten a divorce, maybe, or got lost their family for whatever reason, and. There are people that go out into the mountains with no intention of ever returning. Mm-hmm. I won't put too much into that just so you don't get in any trouble here, but there are people that don't plan on coming back.
Yeah.
Not all who wander are lost. Some people want to be lost or don't want to be found. And then other people are just out, you know, having a good time and happen to go missing. Mm. So that's kind of what this the series that I'm working on now, it's a, more or less the more unusual disappearances. I mean, each one can be unusual in its own right, but especially some of the ones in the Smoky Mountains book, that's volume one of National Park Mysteries and Disappearances. There's some of those cases I'm heavily invested personally in, like the Dennis Martin case. The boy went missing on Father's Day in 1969. He was 6 going on 7 and I was 5 going on 6. So we're right around the same age. And that just always stuck with me. That was the first time in my little kid mind that I thought, you know, yeah, bad things can happen to kids. You can go missing and never show up again. And I kept scrapbooks from all the local news there because it, you know, happened about an hour away. And somewhere, I think I think my sister-in-law's got them now. I've got a couple of scrapbooks full of clippings that I clipped out. I read the paper every day. We had two papers. Back then, the morning paper was the Knoxville Journal. The evening paper was the Knoxville News Sentinel. And I've literally followed that case from day one. Coming up on, I think it'd be the 57th. But last year would have been this year, Father's Day would have been the 57th anniversary. I mean, in my mind, I thought, well, we don't live that far from the Smokies. I even went out and rode up and down the road close to where we lived on my Schwinn Stingray, looking in the bushes for him. And, you know, just little kid things like that. But, again, it stuck with me. Same with Trini Gibson. I recognized her from the photos in the paper. She was a server at a restaurant at Westtown Mall that my parents used to like to go eat at, and she carried the tray to our table sometimes. And she went missing. She was a junior at Bearden High School.
Geez.
Oddly enough, lived in the same neighborhood as Dennis Martin. There's no real connection other than that. And cross-town rivals. She went to Bearden. I went to Carnes, you know, rival schools. And I think I was a sophomore or maybe a freshman that year. So again, you know, kind of a little personal connection there because it happened in the area. And I knew who she was when I saw the pictures. And then the third really strange disappearance like that was Polly Melton that disappeared in, I think that was 80 or 81. And she was hiking with some friends in the Dudley Creek campground area, the Smokies. and just walked on ahead of the other two ladies, went around the curve in the trail, and was never seen again. And my hiking and skiing club that I belong to, actually, we helped in the search for that. So, again, a lot of these stories, particularly in the Smokies, and that was why I decided to do that for the first volume. That and the Smokies is the most visited national park in the country. Last year, with everything going on, it still saw over 12 million visitors. And the next nearest is Yosemite, and it was in the single-digit millions. But Smokies, it was a great place to grow up and have a weekend playground, or we'd go up for a couple weeks in the summer sometimes. A couple of my mom's brothers had restaurants up there. But there's a dark side to the Smokies, too. There's a lot of creepy things that have happened there, a lot of Cherokee legends. I mean, you've got Spearfinger that wanders the hills there. But one of the creepiest that I know of happened right in Gatlinburg, which is a little town there just before you get into the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. There was a haunted attraction there on the parkway, which US 441, the main drag through town that leads into the park. But there was an attraction there called Hauntings on the Parkway. And it's just kind of weird, you know, you're right in the middle of the mountains and there's mini golf and funnel cakes and all this touristy stuff. And then here's something spooky. And what it was, it's also known as Hauntings or the Hauntings Extreme Ghost Show. It changed hands and rebranded itself a couple times. But what it was a turn of the century style spook show, like stuff out of the spiritualism movement from around the turn of the last century, where they had a medium on stage. And they would put her in a little cabinet and close the curtain, and a tambourine placed in there with her, or a bell would ring, objects placed in her lap. And even though her hands were tied with scarves, they'd close the curtain, things would come flying out of the cabinet. They did the spirit slates where somebody would write something, they would tie the slates together, put them in there with her, and then when they brought them back out, something would be written on the slates. So it was a lot of trickery, a lot of parlor magic and things that you might have seen a stage magician do. But unfortunately, back when this was first employed by a lot of the false mediums around the spiritualism time, you know, it was right around World War I, and a lot of people had relatives that didn't come back. You know, Uncle Ed didn't come back from the war. Let's see if we can contact him. And a lot of those mediums really put on a show. But unfortunately, it was fake. It was just to dupe grieving people out of their money. And that's what this was. It was kind of done tongue-in-cheek and in a fun way. And it was more frightening for the small children, I think. But there was the story where art kind of imitates life here. There was a manager that worked there one time named David, the night manager. And after everybody had gone home and he was closing up one night, he had a heart attack and died in the auditorium behind the back row of seats. He was trying to get out and go get help, they theorized. And the bad part about that is they didn't notice his body until the next evening when he didn't show up for work. Somebody and people in the audience had throughout that day, they did a show like 20-minute show every hour or something like that. So it went on throughout the day. So the poor guy had laid there dead in the back of the auditorium for several hours, eight hours or so anyway. And some of the audience, the tourists, had seen it and thought it was just part of the show, part of the spooky festivities. Well, shortly after that, they started having strange things happen in there. Things that were carefully put away the night before would be tossed around. The spirit slates that I mentioned, they would find those, even though they'd been wiped clean and put away. A lot of times they would find them the next day out in the auditorium. And one of the most common things written on them was David, the name of the night manager that had died in that space there. So there's some conjecture, you know, that his spirit was trapped in there. A lot of the people that worked there would hear things and see things. It was a blackout type art. The people that rang the bells and moved around on the stage and stuff, they were wearing like a head-to-toe black suit, so you couldn't see them. Even their faces were covered. And they were reported being touched in the dark, and particularly in the office, some of the younger females that worked there reported feeling hands on them in the office when nobody was around. And it got to the point where it was hard to keep employees because everybody local knew the legend and had heard all the stories and stuff. And eventually it closed down, went out of business. Now it's a laser tag place. And I've thought about that. You know, it's still dark in there. It's still creepy.
Oh, wow.
And I'm wondering if sometimes, you know, if people in there in the dark playing laser tag, particularly
get grabbed.
Females get grabbed or occasionally hear the cries of the lonesome ghost of David still trapped in the haunted part of it.
Old handsy David there, huh? Goodness gracious.
Yeah. That's in, because I included some ghost stories and legends and things in there too, not just missing people. It's National Park mysteries and disappearances. That would kind of be one of the mysteries, I guess. So,
yeah, good old David. And yeah, just to be clear, book number two, volume two, I should say, is all about California, Yosemite, Joshua Tree, and of course Mount Shasta, which has all sorts of legends and lore and
strange. And I've had people ask me why just those three, but those are the big three in California.
Oh, you probably could have written three separate books.
California volume two or three.
Yeah, exactly.
And I may do that at some point, but those are my favorite places that I've been, that I've traveled to, particularly Joshua Tree. If you read my story in there about the seance, that I didn't participate, but I observed two girls trying to contact the spirit of Graham Parsons, country rock or cosmic rock, as he liked to call it, musician that died in Room 8 at the Joshua Tree Inn back in 1973. He overdosed and passed away. And I don't know, you can still feel his spirit there. It's creepy, though. I think the only original pieces that are still in the room, there's a chair and a mirror. And you kind of gaze into that mirror and think that the last time he ever saw himself alive was in that mirror. And it gives you a really, really creepy feeling.
That's creepy. Mm.
And not only that, but he had a pact with his road manager that whichever one of them died first, the surviving one would steal the body, take it out to Joshua Tree. It was National Monument back then. It's National Park now. And burn it at a place called Cap Rock. And his road manager did indeed do that. They had Graham's body in a coffin and was shipping it back to Louisiana for him to be buried where his family was. And his road manager and another guy borrowed a hearse and went and took the body off the tarmac at LAX, then drove it back out to Joshua Tree, opened the lid, 5 gallons of gas and a match, and Graham's spirit was released into the desert as per his last wishes. A lot of creepy stuff out there, but I'd like to go back there sometime and maybe do a more thorough investigation.
That's friendship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, somebody that would steal your body and take it out in the desert.
That's
and burn
a friend. I mean, if you don't have friends that would do that for you, I'm just saying, that, you might want to keep looking.
a friend, what is they say? A friend will help you hide the bodies, but a real friend, I guess, will steal your body and set it on fire.
Yeah.
In the middle of the desert.
Wherever you want to be burned and laid to rest, damn it, that should be
that
where it happens.
What he wanted. He wanted like a Viking send off, instead of on the water in the desert.
Yeah.
And for a long, long time out there, you could still go. There's a little overhang there at Cap Rock. You could still dig around in the sand there and find little charred pieces of the coffin. They got all the human remains out of there, allegedly. But last time I was there, you couldn't even tell. The overhang used to be blackened under there where the remnants of the fire.
Wow.
And there's a lot of graffiti and stuff there, and they've cleaned all that up now. So I think they should at least put a plaque or something there. Now at the Joshua Tree. At the Joshua Tree Inn, though, the roommate, it's done up as a shrine to Graham. There's posters of him. There's ticket stubs and guitar picks and they have a boom box in there and a big stack of CDs of his music and stuff. So you can get the whole experience in that room.
And Steve,
how cool is that?
And Steve, if you would, let everybody know about Volume 3, where it's, you know, located, where you're talking about, and the fact that it is available for pre-order right now.
Yeah, it's available for pre-order, and last I heard, the pre-orders are doing well. It's Volume 3 is going to cover the Pacific Northwest, particularly Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And again, I could probably do a separate book on each one of those, but I'm picking the best, and I hate to say best disappearances, but the most interesting, I think, the most mysterious disappearances and some other facts and legends from out here. Got a really, really good one from Washington State, where a whole village of children disappeared while picking berries and never came back. They lost a whole generation there. Oh. And if you follow a lot of the missing stuff, berry patches usually figure frequently in this. And this is a place I've been to, and that I'm going to go back and actually film some stuff for my YouTube channel. Also like to invite your listeners to come over and join me there at Missing Persons and Mysteries. Got a lot going on over there. Just about to hit 120,000 subscribers. We've had just a boom of a year over there, and I love it.
Yeah, you guys are both staying super busy. And Steve, since you're starting to, you know, plug everything, finish whatever plugs that you need to, and then we'll go to Cisco, of course, and let everybody know where to find her. And then talk again, obviously, about the fact that you guys collaborate together every Monday. But yeah, finish all your plugs there, Steve.
That's pretty much it. Like I said, my first two books, Strange Things in the Woods and More Strange Things in the Woods, those have been combined into one. And then my autobiographical, My Strange World, it's out in paperback too. That's my personal supernatural experiences from childhood on till fairly recently, till the book was written anyway. Had more since then. And then these three volumes, they're on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. I do the, like I said, Missing Persons and Mysteries. Then I have another smaller YouTube channel, like a private channel called 13 Past Midnight, that if you listen to some of the early videos, you might hear a familiar voice announcing the videos. Do you remember doing that for me, Shannon?
I absolutely do.
Yeah. The other night I was playing one of the oldies there, and you came in and said, you're listening to 13 Past Midnight, and I think it's Laura Stevens. She's got a podcast now called Midnight in the Mountains. Yes. She types in the chat real quick, all caps letters. She said, is that Shannon? And I'm like, yeah, good to hear.
Yep.
I'm still very proud to be a very, very small part of that.
And then you narrated a story for me, too, up there, the one about the disappearing or the disintegrating people.
Yes.
Where that was a creepy story where some girls, and I'll tell a quick version of it. They had gone to just walk around by the lake and went into the woods and found a campsite with a tent and everything. And a pair, full set of clothing, male and female, that looked like the people had just laid down on the ground and literally disappeared or dissolved. Shirt, pants, belt, shoes, socks, everything. It was just no people, no bones. But a fascinating tale. And then the book that Cisco and I did together, that's really her stories. I kept after her to write a book. And finally she said, okay, I'll do it, but I'm going to take you with me. And so we're all children in the wilderness of the afterlife, a guided tour through a haunted life. Took me a few years, but I can say that without tripping over my tongue.
You got it, baby.
And basically it's all her personal stories and accounts, really, really good supernatural stories from all over the place. Alabama, Gettysburg. The Gettysburg chapter alone is worth the price of the book. And I go along behind her and try not to overshadow or anything. I really reined myself in, and I'd tell maybe an anecdotal something or, you know, a little more than, yeah, what she said, but then I didn't want to overshadow her. So it worked out well. And the way we wrote that, she'd write her chapter, send it to me, and then I'd write my little bit at the end, Steve's thoughts or whatever we called it. And she never saw my part until the whole thing was finished. And then she's like, this is perfect. I was scared to turn it into.
It did turn out good. It melted well together. It's like, you know, yes. When you're making a cake, you just have the right amount of recipe in there. And of course, Steve coming behind and saying, you know, you get this real long story, this chapter, this, you know, little girl going seeing like snot hags and pig shapeshifters and all this other stuff. And Steve comes by, it's like, yeah, that reminds me of the time that my, you know, the lizard ran up my daddy's leg or something. Yeah. I was like, what?
It's and a perfect compliment.
We are when we're together. We'll tell a story and that'll jog the other's memory of something else. And then that's another story and back and forth like that. We've done that just on a normal conversation, not on a show or anything. We talked, first time we talked, I think we talked for like about 7 or 8 hours. Yeah. Soraya Ascath hooked us up. It's like,
I was getting faint. But it was fun, you know, and we do the same thing on Monday nights on my show. That's a YouTube. We've had to revamp the whole thing and just get it out there. So now I just said, you know what? I love the live chat. We have a fantastic group of people that get in there and talk amongst themselves and talk about the subject and, you know, interject all that energy in there. It's fantastic. So we do that. I do a Sunday night live with a guest, and then Mondays I do with Steve, and it's called Monday Madness. And this Halloween, we are doing a Sunday night. Now, we're calling it the Halloween Costume Party Video Call-In Happy Birthday Steve Ghostly Extravaganza. So you call in, you dress in a costume if you want, call in to wish Steve a happy birthday and give us a ghost story, and then we get somebody else on. That's the way we're going to do it. We're doing that Halloween night this Halloween. So come join us and join the live chat. Have fun. You know, listen to some good ghost stories. It's, you know, why not? It's like the new kind of Halloween costume party, I think. So,
Cisco, what is the name of your channel?
Oh, it is Journey Through the Gate Paranormal Portal Podcast. Yep. Probably the longest you'll ever have to type into a
She loves those long names.
I do.
She's just drawn to them, and that is quite all right. Once you start typing, it'll pop up anyway. You know, if people get a little too lazy to type out the whole thing, don't worry. The search bars always help you out.
You'll see Crispy. Crispy will pop up there with the with the bleeding letters.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking for it. Crispy the Ghost. Journey Through the Gate will usually pull it up.
Exactly.
You usually get it. But you'll see a cute little ghost with some scary lettering. And, you know, a lot of people say that. It's like, I hate people use that font. But you know what? I love it because in my logo, it's basically there's going to be some scary stuff. But, you know, you got to lighten up and enjoy, you know, a good ghost story. And you got to, you know, try to give a ghost a break, you know, because I don't know how else to put it, because they've really gotten a bad rap over a long time. And it's really, like Hans Hölzler said, they're just people in need of help. You know, there's some nasty ghosts out there. But I don't know that, you know, if I went out at a bad time, I would, you know, if it catch me in a bad mood.
Exactly.
I might come back and look a little scary.
You'd be crispy. You'd be a little crispy about it. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But Crispy's a happy ghost. Crispy, if you see Crispy, the part of her logo, he's all over everything. He's a happy little guy, Crispy. So,
I just want to mention, for anybody that hasn't heard it, The Strange Secret of Cabin 22.
Oh, thank you.
Cisco's redone that. Go over to her channel and listen to it. There's like, how many parts? Six, seven
well, it's
parts?
14 it's like... hours. Basically, look at it like an audiobook. But mm-hmm. I wrote the book. It was a birthday present for Steve. It got ginormous. And I wound up doing it complimentary with video accompaniment. And the whole thing is narrated by me. I do a whole bunch of wild voices. So if nothing else, come watch me act a fool. But it's a good story. And it's a hopeful story. And it's a scary story. And all of it is based on true stories that either happened to me or friends of mine or acquaintances of mine, and put all together in this big old novella.
Ghost kids, there's dog
Rougarou.
Bigfoot, there's
soul collectors, you know,
haunted fishing tackle, a rat, a rat with a mind of its own.
Yeah. It's bad moonshiners and bad guys and good guys and Bigfoot, and everybody's just collaborating. Native American lore and everything comes in, shamans. And so as a gift to your listeners, I have put all that together in a playlist. Please enjoy it. You know, little kids, I don't know, but there's some gory stuff. But I don't hold back in this story. Everything happens. So think Stephen King on steroids.
Well,
but, you know, that's free for everybody. It's in a playlist on my channel. Go listen to it. Enjoy, and happy Halloween.
As everybody knows, all this that they have just mentioned will be linked in the show notes. If you guys have any trouble finding anything, just head on over to endofthefrayradio.com. Well, you two, you know I love you. Thank goodness that we got 6th annual done. I'm already looking forward to the 7th annual.
I was just gonna say, I'm ready for number 7.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
It's just
always a joy.
Thank you. And congratulations, podcaster. That is fantastic and well deserved, and we're very proud of you, love.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You guys added to that. I mean, every year you guys make me look real good around Halloween time. You know what I mean?
It's a big group, man. It's a global group of like-minded people. We can't do it without the listeners.
That's
we can't
right.
do it without the stories and the ghosts and the engineers and the producers and each other. Amen, brother. Amen. I love you all. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, you guys.
Happy Halloween. Love both of you.
And happy birthday, Steve. And everybody remember, go over and wish him a happy birthday live on
Mulder,
Halloween.
My little dog Mulder, it's his birthday too.
Oh
Mulder. Happy birthday, Mulder.
He's a rescue pup from the Pixie Project, a no-kill shelter here in Portland that I support. They weren't sure exactly when his birthday was, so we made it the same as mine. So
That's
we celebrate our birthday on the same day.
Hugs to Mulder and hugs to you, Steve.
Absolutely. And come join us for the birthday party, you know, dress up and just have fun. Come hear some ghost stories and tell us a ghost story. Give a story, get a story, and we can spend a little Halloween together. You know, it'll be great.
That's right.
I'll put the link to that show in the live chat so you'll be able to get in. Okay.
Good night, you two. I love you.
Good night. Thanks,
love you too, baby.
Love you too, Shannon. Thanks.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bio. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves. Except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. that after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from.
Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.